Okay, I'm fresh out.
I was chatting with a friend on the way over here.
Mm.
Who, by the way, may come visit us. You never know. She's interested.
Yay.
I gave her fair warning, but she's still interested.
Is it possible to actually warn someone?
No, not really.
Not that, yeah.
But we were kind of talking about things.
Thank you.
How a model topic, but
find one that's not.
Yeah. The whole Facebook thing and what everybody looks like on Facebook, everything looks all shiny and great. And
it's pretty rosy out there.
She had been to the shore with folks, and I don't need to give the details, but it was like really kind of crappy, brown-nosing, shore house politics kind of stuff was going on.
Oh, yeah.
She was kind of on the outside. And, you know, we both pretty much came to the conclusion that frequently, you know, what goes on between muggles is just, it's just not attractive or interesting, and let me the fuck out.
Yes.
And then I can actually find it in myself, in particular in my marriage, where...
Yeah.
I mean, I try to keep it clean, but I'm still playing some of those games. Like, I want what I want. And toward clarity, but...
Oh, you're doing shore house brown nosing in your marriage.
Sort of.
Yeah.
I didn't make that exact... line, but yeah, in some ways I do that.
Yeah, of course.
I love him more when he's helping me with things than I do when he's not. Pathetic.
Well, there's nothing like conditional love.
I hate myself. Half the time I just do.
Really? Why?
Either that or I'm reveling in the drama of it all.
Oh, well, there you go.
I did not intend to talk about me. Do over. Change the subject.
Sure.
I hate being a muggle. I'm sick of it. And I'm really miserable sometimes, and I don't have a real solid reason to be miserable.
No muggle does. It's true.
Help. Let me out of this.
That's the trap door, you see. When you want to get out of what it is that you think you're in, then, you know, the big M that you wear around your neck.
Yeah.
Is simply reinforced. You know, the pursuit of love and peace and happiness and nonsense like that reinforces one's greed for future experience. And greed for future experience, which I'm not condemning, you know, is how that M just keeps flashing. Muggle, 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 and that's cool. It takes, let's just say, a different quality of maturity whenever it comes to drop out of the loop of the greed of for improved experience. And then all of the, let's just say, practical human, right, manipulations and charms or deceits accompany our behavior as we negotiate with each other, either casually or in more intimate relationships. There's nothing to do about yourself. Because what we're, let's say, impatient with as concerns authentic self-reflection, which is hard to come by, right?
Well, it's a moving target.
Yes, that too. Even being willing to do authentic self-reflection is one thing. Being good at it is another, because it is a moving target. And we are just as good as evading ourselves as we are anyone or anything else. That's that, you know, muggle, muggle, muggle. Yeah. So it's, I mean, wouldn't you say it's really constructive speaking, to be weary with it or impatient with it, to be perhaps even, you know, self-critical of it all. That's a good day. It may not feel so great when having to confront the gestalt of those reflections, but it's a good day. If it doesn't happen, if some kind of encounter doesn't happen where we are confronting the curious ways that we're capable of inauthenticity, and I'm not putting a value judgment on being authentic as contrasted with inauthentic. I mean, fuck that. You are what you are. You got what you got. You're going to roll how you roll. And there's no point in berating yourself or anybody else with respect to how authentic or inauthentic they are. I mean, the whole fucking consciousness is inauthentic down to the marrow. So how do we expect to find pleasurable, reliable, or coherent authenticity in the midst of a dream?
Yeah, one moment I'm absolutely sure of something, like this is how it is, this is what I'm doing, and then 2 days later it's like, whoop.
Oh, 2 seconds is good. I mean, you're okay. 2 days is a good run.
I used to think I was a pretty solid person, like I could like make a commitment and keep it. And
yeah.
And who decides if it's authentic?
No one else but you. No one has the right to, really.
Next day, you're changing it.
Yeah.
Or 2 days later.
And that's authentic. Like the change is as authentic as the original take on things.
The power of human pride is to suggest that I or others have the miraculous capacity or the miraculous power to judge authenticity and then hold ourselves or others either in esteem or contempt if we fail to live up to this completely arbitrary set of rules that change all the time depending on how we need or want to feel about things or do about how we feel or feel about what we do.
That was one of the first things I was totally puzzled by, and I asked Peter Brown. I was like, Peter, from what you're saying, it doesn't sound like there's any like moral underpinnings or compass stuff at all here, because there was a lot of that with Byron Katie.
Yes, there's a certain emphasis. Yeah,
in
right.
other areas, like it's always like, oh, it should be loving. Well,
oh my God.
Peter's like, F that. This is too weird to ever even evaluate whether
yeah.
it's loving or right or wrong.
Right. Yeah. Again, it has to do with the emphasis that's placed on, behavioral comforts or behavioral consequences, as if cultivating admirable karma is going to be to your spiritual advantage.
It does appear that being as decent as I know how to be to other people works better for me.
Well, there's no question that it works better for you. I mean, you know, why create a hell realm rather than a smoother path for yourself in the dream? Yeah, sure. Why not behave in a way that cuts yourself and others a break, provides affection, dignity, accountability, show-up ability?
It feels better.
Forgiveness. Oh, absolutely.
But there is no absolute one is
no
better than the other.
No.
There can't be.
Right. And again, you know, the measure of all this weirdness that's coming from the feeling tone of one's humanity is conditioned. And there's a certain frustration in that, that, you know, through the naive years of so-called spiritual seeking, one might place an emphasis on foolish notions like compassion or these other silly accoutrements that humans, you know, like to sign up for or cultivate or be treated in a certain way. And we can all appreciate those. I mean, those are kind of practical.
Well, some of the people that are the most biggest advocates of that
talk
it up the best.
Well,
because they're trying so hard to be nice, they can't quite be honest, and they're just a mess.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's authenticity and there's authenticity, right? like Peter might be emphasizing a kind of an authenticity that has to do with their remarkably secular, though sacred, approach to understanding, which transcends what we might hold as near and dear, you know, as human so-called behavior. Whereas Byron Katie and others of her ilk place up to a point emphasis on cleaning up your side of the street. Now, if you're referencing of your so-called life through circumstantial feedback loops, behavioral feedback loops, ill-feeling feedback loops, then you remain in a kind of a hysterical condition, right? You remain dependent. The way things go, how well people are obeying your wishes, again, casual or intimate. And so you're always, you could say, at odds with an unruly reality that doesn't give a fuck about your agenda. And in that case, one will never have peace. There's no peace to be gotten if you're trying to impose your human identification on a wild field that turns out to be transhuman in its nature. This is where, you know, you can say a lot of the so-called, you know, New Agers that want something for themselves or want to convey something to others, either to make a living, you know, or to hang out or for adulation or, you know, being recognized spiritually or to create an ashram, whatever the motivations are. But that whole loop of, you know, this kind of fundamental codependency with circumstances and events and the ridiculous vagaries of reality, it creates unhappiness. But like the monkey that's got the banana right through the lock, we just won't let go of it. We will not let go of it. We just don't trust what this is if I'm not in control.
I was thinking about steps 1, 2, and 3 yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Admitted we were powerless and our life became, it was unmanageable. I got it. Like, in a huge way.
That's
completely
that's
freaking manageable in my head.
Absolutely.
Came to believe that something greater than me could restore me to sanity. Got it. I got it.
Maybe.
I really do believe something could. It doesn't mean it is, but I know it could.
Okay, well, that's very faithful on your part.
I believe that it could because I've, just in my experience, it seems possible.
Okay.
And then the third one is made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him.
Right.
That's where I'm like, not doing it. Like, that's
okay.
Exactly what you were saying. If you
yeah.
can step back and just let this kind of have you, which is my way of putting it.
Yes, I think that's a great metaphor.
Clearly I'm not doing it because I'm saying what this is not fucking working because I feel crazy.
Yeah.
A lot.
Right. Untrusting and manipulative is how humans are, untrusting and manipulative. I mean, you know, come on, let's face it. We can, some of us, if we're a little fortunate, whether socioeconomically or whatever, you know, from a point of view of behavioral or spiritual, whatever maturity, can certainly put on a show as if we appear to be able to get along well with others. And some of us are actually charming and likable and funny and great to be around in all kinds of respects. And some of us are just, you know, downright criminal and selfish and abusive to the core. You know, the range is insane, right, of how humans roll. So even the notion of where you'd like to come out in all this is a fantasy and creates a tremendous, creates a certain internal pressure. Because where you think you want to come out in all this is the loop of, let's just call it, having a future. the loop of basic mistrust. Because future, occupying a future, any kind of future, in a condition that's either that either ameliorates suffering or brings you the boons that you have long deserved, right, creates suffering. You're enrolled once again in the elaborate ruse of being a creature in time and dependent on the way that you feel.
Very dependent on the way that I feel.
So
how do you
look,
not be dependent on how you feel?
Question. How do you not be dependent on the way that you feel? That's a rare question, you know.
I tried. This week I actually really tried.
Not behaviorally. That's the rub.
I know.
Doesn't mean you're going to be like, I feel like shit, but I'm really happy about it.
Yeah. Well, see, look how profoundly and generously this sentience is, you know, emerging, you know, the fountain-like nature of experiencing. Oh my God. Fuck. When did I sign up for this shit? And then now that it's so, and you can't escape it, maybe with suicide, but maybe not. Gotten any reports from those who that have successfully suicided to tell us it worked, it's worth it.
You can find people that have reviewed reports. Comedians.
Well, sure, you know, well then, if you're inclined, you can rely on those reports and then decide, after you've gotten such excellent feedback, whether to remain living or take your life if it's gotten to that point. Yeah. So let's just say no one is, you know, no one's being encouraged to suicide anytime soon. You know, okay, so here this is. We're going to stick with it for a while. Unless the bus comes rolling down the street and someone pushes me in front of it, I think I'll just stick with this for a while. Okay, so here's all this feeling. Oh, my God. Jesus, what do I do with myself? I mean, it really is, you know, an incredible pressure of so-called sensate consciousness just to be alive. It's not casual. Mm-hmm. It's not. It's just, it's really unnerving.
Yeah.
And now, but that's just it. You know, what you could actually, not to put experience in your experience, what you could actually be feeling is the, call it the impersonal, implication-free, impossible pressure of sentient experience. Doesn't have to have content, doesn't have to have manipulation, doesn't have to have disappointment or pursuit. It's just like, oh my God. Oh. Now, few of us, you know, actually, you could say, aspire to or navigate their life experience to feel the roots and rudiments of experience on its terms. The pressure of it.
Usually it's run.
It's always that.
Like,
yeah, so most of us are living in, right, a theater of our own mind, simply negotiating with the images of the theater.
Yeah. They have to be, it seems like, I mean, they don't have to be small, but it's easier to construct shit. If you only got like 6 pieces to deal with, you're good. Shit makes sense. You can put that together pretty quick and easily. But
as
it like expands, it seems like it just keeps expanding. And you're like, I could stitch together. I mean, I could just grab anything and montage to my, you know, and you just see how insane. You're like, how many different stories you could tell and ways you could tell it and truths or not. And it's just like.
That's right. That's its fountain-like nature. And what you're referring to is the aspect of the fountain-like nature, which we might call mind, storytelling.
Yeah.
Association and metaphor, future and past, and judgment, right? Comparison, measure, like, dislike, deceit, manipulation,
cause and effect,
dissociative behavior, assertive behavior, right? Being somebody, not being somebody, It's like, oh man. And if that shit quiets down, which is again kind of rare, that, you know, the mayhem of mind actually quiets down, well, now you have to confront the sheer impossibility of being you. And we often go to what we call mind or the entertainment field to unconsciously avoid the shock of sentient awareness. We can't handle the shock of sentient awareness. And so we entertain ourselves by going into a fantasy field. And then pretending that love and peace and understanding is, you know, valuable somehow. It's not.
You've made sure that's no longer really a possibility.
Well, I've
been here long enough, it's like gone.
I do my best.
I want to go back and there's no
way. I mean, it's not, I can't do anything with anything, obviously. Right? It's one's own relationship with what they consider the reality of themselves that does the instructing, the advising.
If I didn't resonate with what you were saying, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
But it landed.
I mean, you know, there's 30 people over at the Star Group.
Yeah, they got nice cars and shit. They're doing pretty good over there.
I want to manifest some shit myself.
Yeah.
Look what we got, strawberries, and we're okay.
Yeah.
Yeah?
I saw that you were on a manifesting list.
I was?
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, Dave read that one to me. It was good. I kicked out.
Oh, I got kicked out of a meetup.
Yeah.
God damn it.
First time.
Yeah, right. Well, you see, it's just a matter of leaning into someone's pride. If you lean into their pride,
yeah,
and you lean into it again, if they see you as a foe, they reject you. It would be a big, big leap of faith for them to see you as a friend and accept the nudging. So that's all. It's that simple. I mean, here, you know, for some strange reason, and don't ask me why, we kind of agree, if you will, from time to time to have our pride leaned into. And it's not personal. And it's not meant to, injure or embarrass anyone. If one has the maturity to see the structure of pride, the impersonal structure of pride, being the consequence of living in a fantasy realm, then one says, oh, well, wow, I am really prideful. Perhaps I'm way worse than I ever let on. And now I'm seeing it and I don't like it, but I can't avoid it. So, okay, that's cool. It's really cool. But then also to see that the structure of pride that, excuse me, we have created so involuntarily is not ours. Mm. It's not our doing.
That's a whole other step.
Yeah, because as long as we take the misery of my pride personally, that's just more pride.
It's like that article. I didn't read the whole article, I have to be honest, but there was a little snippet that I read, and so I can't. Anyway, it just said, like, you know, as usual, right? All animals other than us, you know, we've separated ourselves out again, and then they can only forecast like 5 minutes into the future. I don't know where the fuck they can. You know,
how do you figure that out?
And then, yeah. But we can project way longer, so that means we can do different things, like. And yeah. Animals are just acting on instinct because they can only, you know, think, plan for 5 minutes.
Yeah, so are we.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
where
do they
you
do better than we do in certain circumstances?
It's such a
tsunamis,
big,
they leave.
Why is
they
it
know.
Such a big leap?
Yeah.
No, but why is it such a big leap for us to admit that we're also just acting on instinct?
Yeah.
Whatever that may be. You know,
that's
means,
right. The instinct remains, even
we
though we
make that leap.
Even though we can fantasize about a future. We're not look at the fucking species. We're operating based on the intelligence of future consequences. We're going to extinction just like in minutes here.
Yeah, no, we're operating on denial.
Yeah, so it's not like our great capacity for futuring has given us the, like, you know, the bright day that the Scarecrow got a brain and said, we ought to stop burning fossil fuels and someone ought to get that president out of office, like, real soon. We're not that bright. There's an acknowledgement. You're right about that, asshole. You and your kind should just shut the fuck up. Tweet, tweet, tweet. So, and you see how the stories of discomfort, malcontent, self-review, disappointment, trying to make it better, just keep coming at you.
Just come so fast.
And they come really, really fast. And you bought a ticket to that train before the conductor, you know, it's too fast. You're on the train. Too fast. The conductor comes down the aisle and says tickets, and you're like, oh shit. I got on this train again. It's too fast. Therefore, the momentum of self, which is, you know, made out of avoidance and betrayal. What are you made from? Avoidance and betrayal. How about you?
Yeah. Avoidance, denial, betrayal. It's small mind.
Yeah, that's me. Yeah, that's me too. So if I nudge a guy like James Stroll, let's say, and say, hey, pal, you're just made out of avoidance and betrayal. You know, are you willing to take it on the chin? No, you're out of the meetup. Okay, fine. Go ahead, reject me. No problem. Been there before. You knew I was going to push you to the point where you'd have no choice.
Is he 6 years old?
60-something, maybe 70-something. No, you know, he's...
You're no longer in my group.
He's actually a well-adjusted guy.
Take your toys and play in your own court.
It's just that he, like all of us, and I'm not singling him out, is full of pride, and we get that. And he's, you know, the leader of a thing that makes it look like a thing, that puts him in charge of the thing as a guy that can espouse to other people what enlightenment is or what it isn't. And won't take a moment to say, you know what? I really can't answer that question. I really shouldn't answer that question. The truth is, I love what I do, and I love these teachers, and I love these teachings, but I don't know. So I just took a little bite out of him, saying, oh, you know what enlightenment is? You can espouse, you know, all the right words and all the right sequences to say what this is or isn't and what's supposed to happen to you when, if you're lucky, you're enlightened too. You don't know, dick. And it would be more wise, my bias, to say, you know, I don't know. I sure love trying to find out. That's a hoot. And I'd love for you to find out with me, but don't look here for answers because I ain't got them. Phew, that would be sweet. That would be a moment. But we're prideful, so we espouse knowledge. About what? Who knows anything? Nobody knows nothing. Enlightened people don't know nothing. If anything, they're like,
healthcare people don't know.
They're just
nothing.
Willing to say, I don't know nothing. Anything. It might make me a little strange, but, you know, when you don't know nothing and you're really deep in it, you're a little strange.
Yeah.
Deep in the heart of knowing nothing.
When you're deep in the heart of knowing nothing, you're a little strange because that, you could say, that reflex of dwelling in, you know, fantasy, looping reference. Might go through a transmutational change by virtue of knowing nothing and then knowing less than that. And so the habit of avoidance and betrayal might possibly shift. What happens then? I don't know. That's up to you or not. But who could you ask what happens? Where are you going to say, so what happened to you? What is anyone going to say? I don't know. I mean, they can tell you stories. Everyone can tell you stories. But what is realization right about now? Oh, I don't know. And could anyone actually possess it? not possessible. This isn't possessible. But it makes it look, when you're, you know, an amateur like James Stroll, it makes it look as if realization is a thing. I know it is a thing, in contrast to how humans usually behave. These kind of humans behave kind of in this way, because there's the absolute, and there's consciousness, and there's lack of body, you know, da-da-da-da, all this fucking shit. And it's like, no, James, no, it's none of that. It's actually just this. It's just this. What does that mean? I don't know. It's up to you. It's just this without knowing what this is. How about that? That's simpler. You want, what is awakening? Well, it's just this without knowing what it is. Now you're free to travel. But when we get caught up in, and why shouldn't we, self-assessment and psycho-emotional issues and all the disappointments of a world gone crazy, then we remain under the influence of this elaborate field, very fast-acting, highly pixelated, with smell-o-vision, field of hallucination. And then we live unsatisfactorily in a realm of imagery. And we're craving still, even with all that heaped upon us. We might be lucky to still be craving what could be referred to as authenticity without saying what that is. Isn't that strange? Even in the midst of being like, I am such an asshole.
There's craving. It seems to go hand in hand.
There's still that, you know, you could say strong impulse, which we could argue, you know, comes from the wisdom of cessation. You must already know the wisdom of cessation, whatever that suggests, to become disappointed with yourself in an apparitional manner that appears to be interfering with that cessation. Otherwise, you wouldn't have that quarrel. You'd have all kinds of other suffering. There's no question about that. But a certain kind of existential suffering is useful to have because, well, you know, it could be speaking the truth, whatever the hell that is, and I don't know. There is a curious kind of sweetness about whatever presence might be when the loop of reference is, you know, quiescent. And that needs to happen, really. Not that anything needs to happen. But if this is whatever it is, and if our tendency is to loop randomly from one lily pad of fantasy to the next lily pad of fantasy ongoingly, which creates the hallucination of an individually, independently lived life where the steering wheel is actually connected to something, that can be a little disappointing. It's not that satisfying. Pursuing creature comforts and security and lovely breakfasts on the veranda overlooking the Mediterranean, though that doesn't suck. Friends, strawberries, yeah, whatever the great Lord has to give us, friends and strawberries. It's all good. I mean, enjoy what there is to enjoy in whatever way you are programmed to enjoy it. And then there's Maud. There's this. Consciousness unadorned doesn't suck. And yeah, there's some amount of trials and tribulations one goes through to peel away the kind of incessant nature of distraction to begin to feel what this is when you're not dwelling in fantasy. Maybe that's what you could say about awakening. You stop there. Right? Beyond that, you're just telling stories. Hey, if you're well-read like James Stroll is and you've got a lot of life experience, you know, as a professional caregiver or a psychiatrist or a spiritual person, then, yeah, you have a rich portfolio of so-called experiences to draw upon. And there's no reason why you shouldn't be useful to other people, a lot of other people, either in exchange for cash professionally or casually at a meetup or whatever the fuck it is. That's all cool. No problem with any of that. The issue is, just like, how free do you want to be? The imagination of having a future is what creates a huge canvas for you to take out all your pastels and your magic markers and your favorite watercolors and your oils and everything else you got, and just paint a wild tapestry of yourself in imagination.
Well, you do that presently too, not just future, you know, I mean,
that's the only way you can.
Yeah. Like, but not just projecting yourself in the future, like the way you take yourself to be in
yes.
the current moment, feel and.
But this is very interesting. There is no current moment.
So, right, it just keeps going. So whether you say future, past, or current is kind of a future.
Yes. Yeah.
It's just like a.
Right. That's right. Taking.
Imagination.
Being in receipt of experiencing through the lens of meaning creates past, present, and future. We put timestamps on the reflex to turn an otherwise so-called blank slate of excruciating wonder into meaning. And the imposition of meaning creates, literally, I would say, creates the sense of self. And, or you could say the sense of self simply participates in meaning, and you can't find the chicken or the egg. The imposition of meaning is the genesis of self. The genesis of self is the imposition of meaning. and then the time stamping accompanies that as part of its nature. So the entirety of the myth of self, continuity, meaning, assignment, space, time is instantaneously arising absolutely impersonally and absolutely effortlessly. And you're like, holy shit, that's just fucked up. But you see, we don't see it in its glorious entirety. We see it fragmentarily. We see it in pieces. Then we get pissed off. Because it's either my fault or somebody else's fault. So you can say, when I'm upset the way this is, either being my fault or somebody else's fault, and my future is beckoning me in a way that I'm not happy about, you could argue that what's happening is that the entire gestalt of fantasy is not being seen clearly enough. That I'm extracting, right, but partial interpretations of it. And by extracting partial interpretations from the, oh my God, what is this? That lends itself to a sense of individuation, which is a sense of continuity, which is past, future, and present, which is some clown giving some other clown advice on what awakening is. And then taking umbrage with my, admitted to say, hey, you really don't know what the fuck anything is. Oh, well, you're out of the meetup because this meetup is about love and understanding. Oh, I guess I got none of that. Yeah. Right. But okay. It's a theme with me. What can I say? I'm wired that way. But you see what price we'll pay? You see what price we'll pay to belong? Do you see what lies we'll tell ourselves and others to belong?
Yeah, even this just being scared of, offending someone or, you know, like what you sent out was just your, how you, you know, you were just being authentic and... you get back this kind of, don't come back to my group, you know, so you kind of get used to that response. It seems intimidating to put yourself out because you want to be liked and have, you know,
be
misunderstood and thrown out of groups.
Yeah. Well, listen, if... If it's a muggly oriented group,
you might as well be thrown out.
You might as well be thrown out of it. You might as well, because there's just nothing there. You know, you can only worship Rupert Spira for so long before you say enough of this shit. See, this is the dilemma. With the arising of the timestamp of self, stop worshiping shit.
Even really bad shit, like Lyme disease.
Anything.
You're a Lymie, you know, we'll give it a name and a group, make meetups.
Yeah. Yeah, you see, that's what we want to be free from. If that instinct is lit in you, then you're like... being free of oneself suggests also being free of worshiping. It really also suggests being free of the presumption that you have another moment to live. And you know exactly what you're going to do with that. You don't. You don't know what you're going to do with it. You might not have another moment to live. There is no future. There's nothing worth worshiping. There's nothing higher or lower than you. There's nothing at all. There's just this fucking dreaming. And when we quarrel with this dreaming because we want to carve out a better niche for myself, capital S Samsara. 76 trombones led the big parade. You can hear them. You can hear those big Samsara trombones. Yeah. But it's very difficult. It's very challenging. It's very subtle to see the intimate arising of samsaric impulse occurs presently. Not before now. Not hence. Just, holy shit. This is a playground of unbelievable metaphor and association. And by seeing it so crisply, intimately, presently, you can put it down. You can really put it down. Which is, can we say, more a gesture of delightful disinterest than in any kind of refusal. Because as this is demonstrating itself, casually, mundanely, routinely, predictably, it is doing so magnificently and miraculously. In that case, meditation or mindfulness, if it was done, you know, well, would really be an opportunity to sit in the miracle of the mayhem of consciousness without lifting a finger to justify, explain, avoid, cling to, get more of, just shattered ongoingly by miracle. And that is a feeling tone, because mind will always create the hallucination of time, because that's what mind is. It's not that it does that. It is that, right? The movement of mind, the movement of association, is the hallucination of time, which is okay. We don't have to, you know, be without thought or anything. You're just like, whoa, holy mackerel.
Time comes in handy if you're struggling right now. If it's uncomfortable right now, time can be very handy.
Well,
it could be better.
Well,
I hope it will be.
It's double-edged, right? It's double-edged. It could feel as if it can work to your advantage as an ameliorative, but it can also be the very reason that one is uncomfortable. The hallucination of time is what's really making you uncomfortable, to rely on it then to be less uncomfortable is, you know, you're playing with snake venom. Mm-hmm. But that's cool. I mean, nobody has a better way to do this, do they? Have you ever met anyone that's got a better way to do this? I haven't.
I'm still looking.
Yeah.
I told myself all these stories about, you know, how I was going to one-up this, like, Lyme thing and whatever, right? And they were all to do, right, with, like, the modern diet being shit and all these things, you know?
Yeah.
And then I'm watching, whoopsie, the 5,000-year-old Iceman.
Oh, the Iceman, yeah.
Yeah, he had Lyme.
Rick Archer.
They found Lyme in
really?
Him. And he had, like, Lyme arthritis in his knees. They didn't call it Lyme arthritis, but he just randomly had arthritis in his knees, and they found Lyme back in his fire case.
They did?
I thought it was from old Lyme, Connecticut.
Yeah, that's what's been going around lately.
No, that's bullshit. 5,000 fucking years ago. I mean, unless, let's see, is some kind of bizarre alien. I don't fucking know.
I hear you.
I'm just saying.
Sure.
In one shot.
That's right.
That blew all of my things to shit.
It can.
I was like, well, what?
Yeah.
Wait. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I made friends with it. I refused to create this. Again, this dream and fantasy that this thing is causing this thing.
If that works, it's nice. I mean, I've met people that whose lives have been absolutely ruined by Lyme disease. Tried to make friends with it. Or took antibiotics or a pick line or a thousand other things that didn't fucking work, and their brains went to jello.
Yeah. I have.
Once he was 45 and had a lot of problems.
Yeah. You'd see he was.
Yeah.
You'd see it in his face.
They think he had lives. Like, yeah. Pretty funny. I'm like, what?
He looks like Rick
and
Archer.
Wheat in his stomach. So they're like, we don't know. Was he farming? Like, what did
he had
like
wheat in his stomach?
Did he have wheat belly?
None of it made any sense. You know, it's like all of the ideas, a lot of them were like not lining up with whatever they were finding on this guy.
Nothing
like,
seems to line up.
It's not going
to
line up.
That's the good news.
I find it hard to believe they were eating McDonald's cheeseburgers, but I don't know.
Yeah, you don't know. The impulse to imagine that there's something that could and should be done with present experience, that's what suggests the delay.
What delay?
The delay of your having a future. Hmm. Here's present experience. And, well, I should do something with it. I should do something about myself. I should do something with and about this. That's self. That's the delay. That's time. That's future. That's apprehension.
My line. Figure out some way to do something.
Because it's you could say it's through that the reflex of, you know, that I should and could do something about this, right? Suggests the genesis of self. And therefore, all of the accoutrements and symptoms that accompany what you're either enjoying or suffering from.
Yeah, then you have something else you can take pride in. Oh, I healed this with my diet.
Yes.
Or I'm in so much pain, and I can take pride in that.
Yes.
Because suffering is something.
We can take pride in no matter what's showing up. We will find a way to be proud of it.
I just wanted it to end. I wanted me to end. But it ended first, so.
All right. Well, you lucked out that time.
Not to lessen the idea of no self.
Yeah.
Maybe there's something to be said in not being vested in a self and referencing everything to it.
Look, the sense, the imagination of liberation continues to seduce you into that there's some other time than now. Where you're going to feel differently about things to your benefit.
With tools. We're going to use some tools.
Okay.
You know, whatever they, eating better, waking up earlier.
You see how subtly this seduces itself, not you, because you're just collateral damage. This seduces itself into imagining that this is something that could, with which you could and should do something about. And we love that feeling. I love the feeling of having utility, mm-hmm. right? Oh, what are we gonna eat? What movie are we gonna see? Where are we going on vacation?
I had such a non-utility day today.
Good for you.
I said, if I have more of these, I'm gonna perish.
Well, I hope you have more.
I feel good.
You don't look perishable.
No, it's just the motivation to say, Jesus, things to be done.
Yeah. Yeah. Next. There's a lot to be done. How about I jump on that wagon and do some of it? I don't think so.
Oh boy.
Yeah. No, this is ugly. This gets a hold of you. It's not that pretty. Especially in this culture, because if you turn out to be like a zero fucker in India, well, they might still take care of you.
Yeah.
But not here.
No.
If you become a so-called awakened zero fucker in this culture,
you're screwed.
A friend can drive you to get disability and food stamps.
They won't give you disability or food stamps necessarily.
Well, then you'd better make sure that Muji, is willing to refer people to you.
Yeah.
So that you can eke by. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or,
travel.
Swim
around
to India.
Yeah, you just do what Paul Hederman does. Jump around the AA meetings or whatever your specialty is by donation.
That's right. Yeah, he gets by.
I think he's living on a lagoon.
Okay, he's living on a fucking lagoon. He is living on a lagoon in Northern California, so something's gone. Something's working out. I don't know if that happens to every so-called enlightened soul.
I don't think so.
Some of them get hit by cars and die of, whatever.
No, that's only for drunk people.
Oh, just drunk people. It's so true. That's why I got thrown out of the meetup. Because it's only for good people that are aiming for good things. Debbie Downers are just not welcome here. It's clear that...
It's like the story of my life.
I know. It's clear that you don't want to abide by our rules, which means everyone should obey me. Oh, yeah, I have a point there.
They just all agree to play a certain something.
That's right. That's right. We have to agree to play a certain something. Yeah. I mean, if somebody keeps walking in with a contrabassoon playing minor keys, it's like, dude.
I like that.
We're trying to play a little Billy Joel here, Get out of here with the contrabassoon and the minor keys. You're out of the meetup.
Yeah. Too bad, a silent meditation.
Yeah, really.
I mean, that's like how this is all the time.
It sure is.
You don't want to wake up and someone starts doing some kind of insane construction next to your window, and you're like,
"Yeah, that's
right. I'm fucking get up now."
That's right.
That's how constantly it's like.
Yeah.
And if you're trying to control it, you're constantly perturbed because everything is
consciousness is a tuba in your face.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
Tickle those lips.
You see how we have to create separation if we try to protect ourselves from the tuba that's in our face. You just create separation and indignation and suffer miserably by trying to micromanage what this actually is, which turns out to be a tuba in your face. Yeah. But if it's a tuba in your face and you're okay with that, it can be kind of mirthful.
I have noticed often since my clock hasn't worked in a long time as far as the speed of how things should go.
Yeah.
I see that things work themselves out and the people that are always frustrated, I fall into that sometimes, wants it to be just a little faster, sooner, more regular, predictable.
Yeah, right.
And it's like if they just kind of relax, or if I relax and go, it's not my time to do or not do this or that.
Yeah.
Life is working itself out.
Well, you're like a Polynesian living on the East Coast. That's all it is.
Yeah, you end up here.
Yeah.
Oh, if I were in the tropics,
yeah, really,
lean
really
against
like
a tree and be there for weeks.
See, yeah. It not being behavioral is so bizarre to be like, like it. Yeah, just has nothing to do with how sanguine you are, or how calm you are, or how anything angry.
Anything. Doesn't matter.
Just doesn't seem right.
No, it's definitely not right. I mean, you could imagine just how many unread notes there are in God's suggestion box. If we're quarreling with this in the subtle ways that we do, then it doesn't have a chance to mutate. And it's challenging to give up, you know, those subtle resistances that we have about whether to trust this or not trust this, about where I am, where I came from, where I'm going. Just to peel all that away. Like I was talking with, Stephen last weekend, taking him to the bus station. And he brought up the topic of fear of death. And how, you know, fear of death was an active, riveting kind of, right, issue, problem, I don't know, you know, challenge, right? I mean, some of us, it's like, you know, fear of death kind of comes and goes, you know, threat to the body, threat to my stuff, threat to my pride, you know, that comes and goes. But this was a kind of a recurring whatever. And I said, so wait a second. So, and he said 30 years of, you know, fear of death. I'm like, oh boy, that's a sentence. So I'm like, whatever it is that you're calling fear of death is likely way stranger than you let on. In other words, 30 years ago, let's say, you labeled a certain kind of visitation, right, as fear of death. We don't know what fear is. We don't know what death is. We don't know nothing about nothing. And yet a certain kind of visitation arises, then you label it fear of death. And then, you know, it becomes a constant companion of yours for decades. And you keep calling it fear of death. And by calling it fear of death and by resisting it, whatever it is, then you are locked in, you know, an unpleasant embrace with your idea of whatever this thing might be that you're referring to as fear of death, because you've frozen it into being one thing, and you hate that thing. Mm-hmm. So you're not really giving it or yourself a chance to mutate through. Because every time the hint of whatever it is shows up, you're like, oh, it's fear of death again. Death be gone. And you're like, you don't have a chance to mutate. And, I mean, look at this. This is, you know, mutative. Right? Kind of. Weird.
Mucilogenic.
It's mucilogenic for sure. That's right.
It's a big-ass goober.
If you want to meet somebody in a bar, it had better be mucilogenic.
Well, it's not mucosal.
Yeah. So I suggested to him, hey, why don't you just, like, if whatever it is shows up again, see if you can just pause a moment. Not accuse it or yourself of fear of death, and really see what it might be. which would suggest also a little bit of relaxation as concerns the reflex to reject. Mm-hmm. Because if I'm rejecting, if my reflex is to reject whatever it is, then I've frozen myself and it in this right unpleasant embrace. And not given myself or the object of my, call it fear, an opportunity to mutate. That's mistrust, right? That's how mistrust of my life looks. I label things a certain way, so I'm frozen with respect to them because I see them or feel them as harming. Harming to what? Well, to me, to my stuff, to my pride, to my health, to my longevity, right? To everything I think I am. And you're like, well, this is a tuba in your face. Where do you want to go? You know, do you want to keep resisting and rejecting whatever this is gifting you with because you know better? Or can you just chill the fuck out for a little while and let it have you, which could mean let it kill you. It could mean that. One day it's going to
kill you, make right? an ass out of you.
One day it's going to. I mean, between now and then, it's like, let it have you. At some point, it's going to fucking kill you. You know, and then the tubas will be singing.
It's easy enough to see.
Like chimes.
Huge booming chimes.
Chimes and tubas.
It's easy enough to, it's like so clear in an intellectual sense that it's nothing but a mental construct.
Okay.
But that intellectual sense of knowing what it is doesn't help one.
No, because it's not that. That's right, because it's not that. By calling it an intellectual construct is untrue. It's not an intellectual construct. There are no intellectual constructs. We don't know what this is, including the accusation that something is an intellectual construct.
I'm talking about, like, my version of that fear of death thing.
Okay.
And you're right, it isn't an intellectual.
It concept. Isn't.
It's almost a visceral experience of something that I don't like.
Okay, there you go.
It's like a physical.
Okay, like so the visceral experience of something I don't like, everyone can kind of relate to that shit. Yeah. So that's the tuba in your face.
That's like, I guess what are we calling instinct in that other article? It's like the same. It's just like this just spontaneously is doing whatever the fuck it does.
Pretty much. Yeah. So you see, the quarrel is sense of self, sense of so-called boundary or ownership, right? Pride of self, pride of continuity, pride of pride, even. Pride of pride of pride of pride of pride. It just keeps rolling. Has an issue. I have issues. With whatever I think is going on, whatever might be intimidating me or, you know, challenging me or upsetting me. And that becomes frustrating after, you know, a couple 40, 50, 60 decades.
Right already. Like want to punch a wall.
Jesus. I've been so afraid for this for so long. I'm so fucking tired. And maybe something changes. In other words, a quality of availability that gives whatever this is permission to mutate without my petty interference. Right? Without my petty interference.
Well, it is interesting the difference that psyches can have. Like this fellow I know had chimney fell on him when he was 21.
What was he doing standing under a chimney?
They were demoing a building.
Yeah.
And that was before they had any cages around the, the loaders. And part of his personality is what's going to fall, what's going to befall him.
That's right.
In life.
Yeah. Mm.
And then the other.
Well, once you're hit by a chimney, it kind of repeats.
The accidental, you know, blessings.
Uh-huh.
It's like, what's going to show up to save the day without doing anything?
Yeah.
And you have that whole spectrum. It's like neither one is necessarily grounded. It's still connected to, I guess, a fantasy self.
Sure.
That has just like full of things that are overcome somehow by some great mysterious wonderful thing. And
yeah.
And then another psyche that says, what's going to befall me?
Yes.
You know. Mm.
Right. Yeah. What's going to befall me is very interesting. Because when's the future? Is it what's going to befall me 5 minutes from now?
Right.
5 days from now? Mm-hmm. 5 years from now? 5 nano clicks from now? And so you see how the sense of self accompanies, is created by, or is the same as the foreboding nature of even possessing a future. If you're in possession of a future, you got to watch out for chimneys.
You're in possession of a present, you got to look out for chimneys.
Well, they're the same. They're the same. That's what's so strange. Yeah. Being in possession.
You're embodied.
Of. Oh, that's very kind. Someone said something very affirming.
Why is your
thing
frozen?
I turn that off. Yeah.
Stopgap animation.
That's what this is, stopgap animation.
Different positions.
Yes, that's right. It's claymation, man. This is claymation all the way down.
Claymation and tubas.
So there's something about, let's refer to it as availability, being undefended, which is a quality of permission, not for this. This doesn't need permission. The tuba player doesn't need your permission, right? The permission is basically for one's so-called self. Give the imagination of yourself permission to be absolutely undefended.
Turn your will and your worth over.
No, don't do that. No, no.
The other day I was like,
we get it as a metaphor for, you know, the recovery catharsis. I mean, that's understandable, but don't do that.
The other day I was like ranting in the kitchen, and I'm like, yeah, like my life has become unmanageable. I've tried to turn my will and everything over to God, but I can't find anyone to turn it over to.
Yeah, yeah. If only I could find the God to give it to. Yeah. I went running down the street yelling, would somebody please take my will and my life? Because I'm fucking through with it.
Going cheap.
Yeah. I go to every meeting screaming, have you found the fucker that's actually willing to take your life and your will? Not really. I just call it my higher power. Well, what's his address?
He's tossing it back at me.
Yeah. What's her cell number?
Yeah.
Here's this. That's a lie. Because now here's this. Oh boy, I thought we could have a moment together in this, but fuck, now there's this. Oh, damn it. Could one approach whatever this streaming insanity is in an undefended manner?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
That's a good question.
And as we play with that, because playing with it is big yoga. It's not casual. Just playing with what would it feel like, the imagination of what it might feel like for my crazy Michigas to be absolutely undefended that's formidable. Just to like, I don't even know what that would feel like.
That's what you were inviting Stephen to do with the death.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes. Let it mutate. Be so undefended that if it's got a mind to kill you, you're not going to change its mind anyway. Mm-hmm. So let it kill you.
Yeah. So and that like kills the fear because it's like,
yeah.
Well, this is just gonna fuck. It doesn't matter. I mean,
yes. You see what
the
we're doing?
Fear is like the control. It's like the. It's not actually a death. It's like a bizarre.
Well, what we call fear, right? Is
can we to let go?
Yes.
But just shit.
Yes. Reluctance. It's also, you know, anticipatory. It's also temporal, right? Fear is temporal. Because if there's an undefended relationship or availability with whatever this might be at present, nothing about you need last. Would that be freedom? If nothing about you or about this need last, would that be interesting?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it? Because then whatever shows up is kind of like gravy. Right?
Always fresh.
White or brown.
Yeah. Isn't it, right? It creates a certain kind of like Scrooge, right? Scrooge on Christmas morning was relieved of the karma and consciousness of his own fear and, you know, defended, angry, impatient, Scrooge-like, miserly nature with life. And the angels cleaned his clock. They just cleaned his fucking clock. He went through the death catharsis with the angel of death staring at his own, right, tombstone. Mm-hmm. And just became, you know, shocked through all of the pain and suffering that he was otherwise holding in his soul. And it got just wiped clean. Next morning, he's buying everybody turkeys. Right? So he was renewed by novelty, by generosity, by fearlessness, he could not contain his joy. He couldn't contain his affection. Now, we don't know what happened the day after Christmas Day.
Yeah, really.
Because we've all had, you know, Scrooge-like moments, yeah, of being uplifted from selfishness, and they rock. No question about it. And I became myself again. All right. Good try. Thumbs up. So these, you know, these meetings, as, you know, blasphemous and strange as they may be, because they don't make any fucking sense in so many ways, is also an opportunity to play with being undefended. See how it feels, you know, to pass through the catharsis of self, the pathos of resistance and rejection. And you have to, because otherwise, it's hard, you can't really leapfrog over it. You kind of have to burn through it. Unless you're Yolande or something. I don't know. Who knows what happened to Rupert Spira? I don't know. He's so dull. So we move through a certain kind of, call it, you know, behavioral catharsis or temporal catharsis, as the insistence of the sense of self starts to relax or mutate. And then we're confronted with a whole new vocabulary. It's not a human vocabulary. It's not a vocabulary of referential symbology or implication. You know, one of our habits, right, is to have a lot of balls in the air. So I've always got something to fall back on, right? If I can't get satisfaction or drama or affection or control or whatever it is that I think I'm after from here, I can get it from here, I can get it from here, I can get it from here. So you could say part of the journey of, let's say, simplifying our karma, simplifying how many balls we have in the air to derive an escape hatch from. Yeah, we simplify a little bit, or it just happens. And now I have, you know, let's just say fewer arenas to extract drama from. And it is a little, you know, threatening.
even not drama, just distraction.
Yes. That's, yes.
It doesn't have to be drama.
Yeah, that's right. Lighthearted drama is variety, distraction. Yeah. Something to do, somewhere to go, something to make decisions about. Yeah. Something to turn into a spreadsheet. I know. I work with spreadsheets all day long. They're like, you know, I love spreadsheets.
You're so non-negotiable.
Mm-hmm.
Put stuff in there, you get it right or you don't. It spits out crap or it gets it right.
Yeah.
Depending on what you put in.
That's right.
They don't negotiate.
Our experience might very well be, can we say, super sensual. Trans-temporal communion. Our experience might actually be unutterable. Undefended, unutterable. And in, you could say, so-called constant mutation. Okay. And therefore, let's just say the reluctance to die or the reluctance to cease might not be so formidable. Liberation could turn out to be like what the Buddha suggested was, you know, cessation and nibbana. It was, for him, it was, let's just say, commonly referred to in a two-pronged manner. Cessation and nibbana. What was the cessation? Well, it's this. And you could say by virtue of the depth of that cessation, the nibbana was the revelatory nature of ongoing whatever, ongoing mutation, ongoing change that never actually began in the first place, right? The mind's capacity to apply the tools of language or the tools of measure to what, quote, reality might actually be, you hit a wall.
I was going to say, which is not accurate, the cessation of futuring and fasting. But even if futuring and fasting is happening, surrendering to presence, even if it's futuring and fasting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can we say it's a quality of enthrallment? So if I'm whatever that is, enthralled with whatever being undefended feels like, then that's it. Really, it's the sufficiency is unimaginable. And though futuring and pasting will show up as they show up, right, in the harmonics of what you call mind, there's not much attention given to them. There's not much identity thrown on the fire. Because the enthrallment, the depth of one's enthrallment is undefended. When the Buddha was assailed by Mara, right, the metaphor is that here he was under the tree, practicing being undefended. And then, right, pasting and futuring and fear and shock and shame and lust and greed and future and past and everything that could assail him was assailing him. That was Mara's job. It's like, hey, I'm the kingdom. I'm the king of this fucking realm. And guess what? I'm going to assail your ass, which is a little bit like tuba in your face. And you know, I'm going to get a reaction out of you. And the Buddha was like, bring it. So, you know, there it was. All night long, the Buddha was just being pushed and pulled around by Mara's, you know, legions, armies of monsters and soldiers and arrows and, you know, lustful creatures of whatever gender you're fond of and, you know, wow. And he was like, what else you got? And it was through that gesture of touching the earth, because the final challenge, after Mara saw that he couldn't get any rise out of the Buddha by assailing him with his portfolio of distractions, was like, well, what right do you have basically to challenge me, you know, the king of the realm, the assailant? And Buddha touches the earth and goes all pagan on this shit, Gaic and pagan, and by virtue of being a child of this. That was the gesture, touching the earth. Mm. And with that gesture, as so the poetry is written, Mara was dispelled.
It's interesting, the way you put that, touching the earth and by virtue of being a child of this, points to humanity.
Yeah.
Being human.
Yes.
Not anything other than fully human.
Yeah, there's something in it. I mean, it's fun to look at that gesture and just recycle it, because maybe it's human and maybe it's earth.
Maybe it's the radiant intelligence.
Maybe it's radiant intelligence. Right? Maybe
that
it's,
appears as this.
Yes. Maybe it was just this. Maybe it was whatever this is without having to anthropomorphize it as Mother Earth or da 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 da. Right? I mean, just the power of present sobriety. The unassailable, undefended nature of so called sobriety, of this touching the earth. This, by virtue of this, I defeat you. And that was it. Then, of course, they got into a lot of trouble because he started talking about shit and, you know, people started misunderstanding him. Because that's how this rolls. Just because the tuba stopped blasting your face doesn't mean you can convince anybody about what that might be. Mm-hmm. You know, sure, he's out.
Yeah, I thought the easiest thing would be to have someone fill in for me for meditation because there's nothing to do.
That's right.
You ring a bell and there's silence.
Yeah.
You ring a bell and there's movement that's optional. You ring a bell and if you want to say something or not, you can.
That's right. All you got to do is ring a bell.
And they feel like they have to give more. And
sure.
So it's interesting how my assumption about doing as little as possible is not as easily, as simply.
You're a native born Polynesian. Yeah.
Oh boy. Do I.
That's right.
You
see? That's right. I like to throw shit in Madame Pele.
While eating coconut.
While eating coconut. Right. Doing the haka haka unu 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 unu. Yeah.
I suppose a certain amount of tension is in the cards for me. Being in the Northeast. It buzzes.
Yeah, it does.
When I come back to this area, there's a
oh boy
a buzz that kind of says, come on, come on.
Oh, yeah.
What are you taking so long? You took a whole extra second. I mean, move.
Yeah, right.
I want it yesterday.
It is. Yeah.
So I'm grateful for people that are not in that rhythm that actually are patient enough to work with me.
Right.
But that's not what we're talking about. What are we talking about?
I don't know. We're talking about whatever we're talking about.
About Mara and the Buddha.
When we're talking about it.
Right. Hard to know. Because I was going to say getting past all that, but it's not. It's maybe seeing through it.
Well, in my experience, if I could say anything about it, it seems to be completely arbitrary depending on what I want. You know, like if I'm in a rush to get somewhere, then I'm riding your ass. If I'm high and I want to be left alone, then I'm like, fucking slow down, people, I'm breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? No, that's right.
But if I don't feel well and I want to get the fuck home so I can get to the weed or whatever, like, dude, get out of my way, I'll kill you.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe not, you know, I'm not as aggressive or something as, you know, but.
The earth had better spin as fast as I wanted to spin.
You're definitely going to be riding someone's ass, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not immune. In fact, that's one really nice fantasy to let go of it. Oh, I'm past all that. I'm more awake than I've ever been in my life.
Oh.
Notice my tone, my manner, the way in which I speak.
Mm-hmm.
Now I explode and rip your face off.
I actually delight in my humanness when it shows up.
Well, let us be the judge of that.
Tuba in your face, man.
Really. It's nice to notice what not doing anything feels like. And we're not talking doing with the digits or the artifacts of my life, but, mm-hmm. you know, with the urgency of one's soul, mm-hmm. right? Don't do anything with the urgency of your soul. Like, oh, wow. Put oneself down. Put a little blankie over it. You know,
time.
A nice little, yeah. Yep.
Time out.
Just time out. Time out for you, pal. And it does take some curious kind of impetus, or maybe we could call it practice, acquaintance and then reacquaintance with what this feels like if you're not agenda driven and not defended and don't have to discharge unpleasantries from your imagination. Or reject or resist anything.
The week is now, not when.
Yeah. We don't need an elaborate body of metaphor for this to be as it is, or to complicate it by assigning it spiritual, you know, words, and then trying to parse what those spiritual words might refer to. If we make contact with this simplicity, we've gifted ourselves that permission for it to mutate as it will. And I don't have to interfere. Isn't that fun? I don't have to interfere with this. If the Pleiadians were so enlightened, what are they doing around here? I mean, if you had the intelligence and or the technology or the consciousness to roam freely throughout the universe, what would be the point at stopping at this watering hole?
There's a birth that's about to happen.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, we're going to go supernova. It's really neat for this to be whatever it is, and that I'm not compelled to blot it out, right, through incessant reference. I don't know, it's like a Thich Nhat Hanh group. We've gone full circle, haven't we, Dave?
Waiting for the next tweet.
we tried to get away from that Thich Nhat Hanh thing, and now we're back. God damn it.
That'd be a good time for me to.
Okay, then. Well, it is 9:07.
This is great, though.
Dave, do you want these chickpeas? Because I can't open them. Them.
Yeah.
Yeah, where's the bell?
It just rang inside.
I'm going to throw them away if you don't want them.
Really?
Yeah. They're too crunchy. My teeth don't hang on them.
They make the good beans.
It's really beans and diesel.
I'll make good of them.
Okay. Is it 9:30?
No, it's only 9:00-something.
No, I have to make a call at 9:30.
I do, too. Isn't that interesting?
You're calling each other for like a blind date or something.
There's something going on we don't know. Palladians.
Good night, everyone. Thank you.
You know.